This podcast is sponsored by Aurora Packaging Solutions, a global packaging solutions provider leading the transition to a more sustainably packaged future. They specialize in developing packaging and visual communication solutions that reduce the impact on the environment and bring sustainability goals to life. With a focus on partnership and service, they create a custom solution for your business. To learn more, please visit www.aurorapackaging.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Sustainable Packaging Podcast with Corey Connors. I would like to welcome Mr. Kurt Bisola to the podcast today. He is an incredibly talented and successful packaging designer and overall designer. And I think that his perspective is going to be very unique and very important in the chain of sustainability that we're trying to build on this podcast. So welcome, Kirk. How are you, sir?
Hey, thanks, Corey. I'm doing well, man. How about you? I can't complain yet. It's still relatively early. I have my coffee, getting ready to watch some UEFA Champions League when we get off this call. So I'm doing well, man. Doing
wonderful.
Well.
Yeah. Wonderful. What is that league? I'm not familiar.
Oh, okay. So UEFA Champions League, it's for soccer, football, as they call it. And it's for like a European league for all the championship leagues. Like, so you have La Liga, which is Spanish, and you have Serie A, which is Italian, and you have Ligue 1, which is French. And then you have the Premier League, of course, in England. And then you have the Turkish League, you have the Russian League, and all these teams come together and they play in two leagues. And this is very packaging related, by the way. So yeah. I'm glad we're going into this.
It's important.
One is from the Europa League, which is a bunch of teams that didn't quite qualify for the Champions League. And the Champions League is all the teams from those leagues I mentioned, like the top four, or top six, top two, and they go to this league and play for the bragging rights, basically, of being the best club in the world. And so today, it's a semifinal between PSG and Man City. PSG is Paris Saint-Germain, which is in Ligue 1. And then Man City, of course, is in English Premier League, and they're ranked number one right now in the Premier League. So, yeah, I just love soccer. Played my whole life.
Oh, that's
played
awesome.
In a while, but yeah. So, sorry. Tangent.
I love over. That. I love that kind of. It's important that we get to know you as a person.
Some people would say that.
Well, awesome. I'm very impressed with your titles. You're the creative director and founder of Mind the Font, and yeah. I see that you've done that for about 2 years.
Right.
According to your LinkedIn profile. You're also a podcast host and very active on Clubhouse, like myself. And I think that's where we originally met, if I recall.
Clubhouse. Yeah, we did. Oh, yeah. I think so. Either that, it was from either Avelio or Adam.
Yeah.
And Avelio Matos or Adam Peak. And it was through somehow, some way, and like, oh, this guy's a packaging dude. I'm like, oh, cool. and yeah, and then of course the name Corey Gade is like, fuck, that's just brilliant. Like,
had to go with it,
dude. It's so good. It's one of those things that seems so obvious, you know, especially if you're a designer or if you're a problem solver. Like, I always think of myself as being a problem solver that just happens to do design. So when I see something like that, I'm thinking, fuck, dude, he came up with that. Why didn't anybody else come up with it? Of course, it has to be taken. It's like, no, it's not. It's like, damn, it's so good. So good.
Thank you so much. I've gotten some calls from people saying, man, I wish my name was Corey, so I could be Corey Gated.
Yeah, so, see, it doesn't work well with Kirk Gated or Mark Gated.
Mark Gated. Kirk. Mark Kirk King, yeah. So tell us about your background a little bit. What got you into design?
Wow. Well, first of all, let's go back to Kirk as a young kid.
Yeah,
Kirk as a young kid was really into comic books and drawing, and it was pretty funny because recently one of my elementary school friends, who I'm still in touch with, she posted a picture that I did because her father was an incredible illustrator, and I saw a picture that I did, and I'd done lettering, and if I could find it, I'll send it to you, but it's when I find it, I'll send it to you, just remind me, but it's pretty cool because it shows I was already doing lettering, and this is like in sixth grade, right, and I was doing it before then too. Always been in the comics, but I never knew about graphic design, didn't know anything about it. I was actually pre-med and was
really
going to go to, I was going to go into medicine. I really admire and love science and math. And it was that or a firefighter, but pre-med was kind of, okay, cool, I can do this. And my dad was a medic in the Air Force for a while. But then I got into it and realized that I wasn't a very good student. I'm a fucking terrible student. Sorry, I hope I can cuss if I cuss.
Just, for sure. This is an adult show, yeah.
Well, you should have someone else because adulting is not the best thing for me right now. but no, so I was in school and I realized like I wasn't very good at studying and stuff like that, but I loved the idea of chemistry and science and stuff because you're always trying to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. So you're always thinking about how do you solve this problem? And I realized like more initially I was a problem solver. Still didn't know about graphic design. And I got together with my ex-wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. She said, hey, why don't you come to classes with me at San Jose State? I'm taking some design classes. I'm like, all right, cool. So we go and she's going through classes and they're doing all these things with all these rules and all this spacing and lettering. And I'm thinking like, well, this is stupid. It's so subjective, right? It's so subjective. I'm used to objectivity. Like if I know 1 + 1 is always going to be 2. You know, and one in design is like 1 + 1 = 2, but also 1.9 + 0.1 = 2, and 1.5 + 1/2 = 2. So there's always different ways to get to a solution.
Well said. And
and so it's like there's all these different manners of getting to a solution. And I realized like, oh, okay. And I started getting into it, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Well, come to find out, my ex-wife's father, my father outlaw, as he is now.
I like that. That's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, someone told it to me and I just keep using it. He ended up becoming my mentor in design because I started getting into it. And he was the head of the creative services department at E&J Gallo Winery for about 40 years. Wow. And he designed the E&J brandy bottle. Like I've seen the clay sculptures that he made. Like it's fucking dope. And he's a global like icon in that realm of like people in the industry. For a while, like you said his name, like Joe Vizola, it's like, oh, I know who he is. And I had that as a mentor, dude. Like that was the craziest thing. And that's kind of how I got into it. Recently, there was a survey taken, I think it's designsurvey.org or designcensus.org, where they interviewed roughly 9,500 designers or 9,600 designers. And out of those 9,600, only 3% were Black. So wow. Designer color, yeah. So it was pretty crazy that
I didn't know it was that low. Wow.
It's insane, man. And the craziest part is not only did I get into the field, but I also found someone who was renowned in the field that just happened to live in the town that I grew up in. It's just the fucking weirdest story. And I just happen to be good at it. And like, it's
meant to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's like one of those things where literally destiny or your fate falls in your lap. Yep. And I just fell in love with it. It's one of those things where I don't take time off because I don't ever feel like I'm.
You love your job.
Like I'm working. Yeah, I don't feel like working. The other problem I'm having right now too is it's just fatigue. Like everything mm-hmm. going on in the world, and just stuff like that. It's really making me feel fatigued, and so I'm having problems to get going at times and try to be creative. And so I was thinking today, like, oh, so Corey, I can't do it today. I'm like, nah, man. Like I have a podcast too, and. And when you have someone commit to you and they say, I can't do it, it's like, that's fucked up. So I'm like, I got to talk to Corey. It's going to make me feel better too, get my juices going. So this is it. So yeah, long story short, that's how I got into
I truly, truly appreciate you making time, even when you're going through stuff.
Yeah.
I truly respect you and your community for the struggles that you guys are going through and all communities that you're a part of.
Yeah. Thanks.
But we need to be here together and solve these issues together. And
yeah, no, it's
just work to be done.
It's not, I don't want to tangent off because this is a packaging podcast about sustainable packaging and sometimes design related things. But at the same time, I think whenever we can, we need to stick up for those who have been marginalized.
Yes.
From one standpoint or another, whether it's handicapped, LGBT, Black, Asian, Native American, or Indigenous people, it's like we have to hold others accountable and make sure that we're all looking towards moving in an equitable way to make the society better for everyone, truly for everyone. And so I'll get off the soapbox now. And then so that's how I got into design.
It's an important soapbox. So thank you, sir. So I'm asking everybody this. Can packaging be sustainable?
Absolutely not. Fuck no. of course it can be sustainable.
Good.
It, to me, it all goes into the care and processes in which you're making the packaging.
Right.
And also Here's a great story. Not a great story, but just kind of a way to use an analogy to describe it.
Yep.
If I'm ever designing something as far as the packaging goes, I have to think of all the ways in which it's going to be used, how it's going to flesh out to different SKUs, how it's going to flesh out to a different product. And I really have to think about its life after the initial design. How does it evolve and how does it continue to live on? Yes. I think it's the same thing with packaging. You have to think of something outside of the initial packaging design, like what's going to happen to it after that person spends 30 seconds opening it? What's going to happen to it? If they want to keep it, fine. And I'm one of those weirdos that does keep packaging to kind of reuse it. I have a box full of like gift cards and cards and one of my old iPhone boxes, right? So yeah. I'm one of the people that does on occasion keep packaging, but most of the time it's like, okay, it's cardboard, I'll just recycle it. Mm-hmm. So you have to think about that. So you have to really think about the life cycle of the packaging itself. And this is really naive or trusting of me, whatever, but I try to rely on my printer mm-hmm. to really give me the insight I need that's necessary in order to make sure that everything's being done properly to be sustainable or sustainable as possible. And most printers are now, a majority of them are now really thinking about that because it comes back on them too. Like, oh, right. You produced all of this and you didn't make it possible for it to be sustainable. It's kind of on you. Yes. I think there's two things also that may, since I'm droning on, and I thought about this, two things that I think really are helpful in regards to making sure that people understand the impact of packaging. I think that the person who's having it printed, let's talk about like Nestle or Pepsi or Coke, large companies printing millions of things.
Right.
And I think that they, correct. And I think that they need to be held responsible to make sure that their carbon input while printing and also after printing mm-hmm. is held accountable. And it's more than, to me, it needs to be like sufficiently heavy fines. Like fine them $2 billion for printing something wrong. Because if you fine them like, oh, we're going to fine you $1 million. Oh, whatever. There's chump change.
Right.
You know, but if you really hit them, and it sucks, if you hit people in a pocketbook, it usually exacts change. Mm-hmm. Hey, I like that. Pocketbook change, kind of like a little play on words. But yeah, so that's one way you could think about doing it. And the other way too is to offer better recycling
yes.
in all areas for people to be able to use their things. Like if I see recycling and on the back of it, there's a different number in the circle of life, you know,
yes. the chasing arrows.
Yes. Yeah. Chasing arrows. And if I look at that, I'm like, okay, cool. I can throw it in there. And then my wife comes, she's like, you can't put this in there. I said, why? It's recyclable. Well, they don't take that here. Or they don't take it this way. So right. I mean, like, what? Why would you even put that on there? And why would you even offer recycling if you don't recycle it properly or you don't offer the means for people to recycle it properly? So I think that also needs to be handled in a much more universally communal impact. I think that's yes. where it needs to happen is in the community. And whoever's running the disposal units or I'm trying to think of the proper word.
The MRFs. The material recycling facilities.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So they need to be able to make things more readily accessible for people like myself, consumers like myself, and yeah. who are interested in it. So I think companies need to be more responsible and recycling needs to be more readily and easily accessed.
A quick break for our sponsor this month. Now is the time to go beyond recycling. SmartSolve pioneers certified bio-based water-soluble packaging technologies that empower consumers and businesses to effortlessly reduce plastic waste. Our non-toxic materials quickly and completely disperse when combined with water and agitation, thus making them easily recyclable, biodegradable, and even zero waste. If zero waste packaging interests you, please contact us today at info@smartsolve.com.
They say that 50 million households in the United States don't have access to recycling at all. That's 38% of us. And to me, that's a travesty. It's absolutely sad.
It's fine. You know, we'll just keep polluting the planet and we'll just go to Mars. I think that's great.
It's
fucking unbelievable.
It's got to change. And I think you and I can be a part of that change and help continue to push this forward towards sustainability. So that's why I was so excited to talk to you. I love the designer perspective, because you really have one of the first legs in the journey. And I agree with you that we should rely on, or we should get the help of, production. I'm often asking, you know, is this paper FSC certified? Is, you know, things like that. So good point. I think it's important that we all have a stake in the game.
Yes, absolutely. And like I said, it's when I'm sitting on the computer and I'm just making stuff and I sketch out my sketch and I move digitally and then I try to present an idea. Once it's at that point of being approved, I think, oh shit, now where do we go? Who do I talk to get this and get this done and make sure it's done properly? And that's where I just kind of rely on sources that I've used before in order to make sure that I'm doing the best I can to help environmentally and things like that. And then I'm going to go jump in my Humvee. And but it's not a Humvee now. It's like a Humvee from 20 years ago. It just guzzled gas. So,
yeah. Diesel. I love it. And, you know, that's another aspect, of course, of sustainability. You know, a lot of people are talking about sustainable packaging, but then they're importing it from all the way around the other side of the world. And it's like, well, okay, that's good that you have sustainable packaging, but could you have purchased it locally or nearer to you? And I think that's one aspect of things that we're not thinking about sometimes when you're looking at packaging.
So. Dude, I just got sent a sample from a vendor who works here from his manufacturer in China. So he's a glorified middleman. I mean, I'm simplifying it and making it sound like this bad thing, but it's like, and I want to go to the person I'm using, like, why can't we find someone local? Because when all said and done, if you, let's say you're going to spend $1,500 for, you know, 2,000 units. I'm just throwing out numbers. Sure. Or you could spend 2,000 for 2,000 units, right? But you're not making the same impact. You're giving it back here to the community. I'm not saying that don't ever source things out of the country, but I'm thinking, like, what impact does that have overall if you're trying to think of being green and sustainable? Yeah. Like that, I mean, that just makes sense.
I agree. We are a global economy, and that's important to support everyone. But correct. I think we're both saying the same thing. We should, when possible, source near you. And that helps in a lot of ways, including costs, advantages, and sustainability. So,
absolutely.
Great point.
Absolutely.
But what do you think is the best way to impact sustainability? Is it design?
I think it's the entire process. I mean, I kind of touched on it before of thinking of the life cycle of the product, not just from using it, but from its conception and why it's being made, and also how it's being made, and then what to do after it's been used and getting thrown away or putting back into the system. I've also thought about different ways to, and it seems kind of cliche and kitschy, but when you have something, and like I talk about my iPhone box, like purposely make something so people can reuse it, so they can repurpose it for things. Try to think of it that way. Maybe you make a bottle that's square shaped, and then people can use it to build walls or to use in different communities, or, you know, just something silly like that. It's just off the top of my head. Yeah. But maybe you could actually figure out a way to repurpose the packaging or think along the lines of how is that product going to be used throughout its entire life cycle and life recycle. So that's the one I was thinking, but I'm not sure.
Well, I like that. Life recycle. Yeah. I haven't heard that. That's brilliant.
There you go. I just came up with it. It's almost as good as corrugated, but not really.
I'm writing that down.
Right now, trademark it. You heard it here first.
Oh, you'll get the credit, sir.
I don't fuck the credit. I want cash, man.
Well, maybe a Bitcoin or two. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
That's the future. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I truly appreciate it. I guess the last question is, how do we get a hold of you and your company? What's the best?
It's funny. My company's name is Mind the Font and mindthefont.com. And then you can contact me that way or just type in Kirk Vaisola. I'm the only Kirk Vaisola. So that's really good and bad at the same time. So if something's out there and it says Kirk Vaisola, is probably attached to me one way or another. But I think if you type in Kirk Vaisola, my name pops up there in LinkedIn. You can contact me through LinkedIn. So yep. Just remember the name and you'll find me.
That's really nice. I don't know anybody else that has that unique of a name. That's cool.
See, there you go.
There's another Corey Connors that's a professional golfer.
Oh, well, you just say you're him from now on.
No.
Just say you're him. I think that worked. I'm that unique of a person. So that's why it's
I agree.
Bullshit.
I mean, you are special.
My mom told me so.
Speaking of your mom, I love your interviews with your mom. Mondays with Marilyn. That's so cool.
Yeah, on Clubhouse. It's okay. So I do podcasts also. And the podcast I do is just Kirk's podcast.
Okay.
Wow. Super original. But no one had it because there's not that many Kirks in general. I've met like 12 Kirks in my life. So I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to call it Kirk's podcast. Mm-hmm. And the idea of the podcast is just to interview people that I admire who have inspired me along the way. So The first one was my mom. And my mom, I asked her about her life, where she grew up. And then we kind of get into things. And I'm recording it. And I realized, like, fuck, my dad passed away. And I never really got a chance to ask him these questions or record these answers or record these questions. It's like this with means of preserving an oral history. Like, the history of things being told orally is diminishing through the use of text and podcast and not podcast, but text and everything else. Like, we don't really... record talking anymore. So as I came up with the idea, I'm like, shit, I should do this with my mom all the time, because people were like, oh, your mom's great, love listening to your mom, she's hilarious, like listen to her all the time. I'm like, well, fuck, why not do it? And that way I can record what we're talking about, I get some stories from her that are just priceless, and then I get a lot of her sayings and phrases and just the way she grew up and how she taught us and just the way she raised us as well. And something that stuck with me for a while since we had that interview was she said, I raised you like a white liberal woman would raise a black child. And she meant that from a standpoint of being proud of who I was, knowing my worth, knowing my value. So I've always been raised with an immense sense of being okay, being myself. Yep. And that's what it really taught me. So the whole idea behind Mondays with Marilyn is just to talk with her about current events and we just go off tangents. We just go, it's called stream of consciousness. Whatever you start talking about, whatever you're talking about, keep talking about it. And I got a text her question. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Corey. What?
I love that. I listened to that episode and your mom is amazing. So I could see how that she's like that kind of motivation. I mean, you're lucky to have her as a mom.
The stats for Black males in this country are not very good for both parents being around in general. And they're being involved in their kids' life. Like, they're not very high. And I was lucky enough that both my parents at home, they both stayed married and they had a fairly normal marriage. I mean, you see him bicker on occasion, but my dad would do anything for my mom. My mom would do anything for my dad. And they taught us a good sense of value, taught us good work ethic, taught us good morals. So it was nice to have that growing up. And for people, I got lucky. And there's no other way to fucking put it, man. It's lucky I'm alive. And that's a shitty thing. I haven't been in jail, which is just kind of like, I mean, it sounds silly, but it's like, that's a stat for Black people in this country. That's staggering. It's like one in three or one in four Black men are in jail at one point in their life. And it's just staggering. I consider myself fortunate, lucky, blessed, whatever you want to say, to be in the situation I'm in. And a lot of it is due to my upbringing and her. And she has a great sense of humor and a strong sense of morals and ethics that were instilled in all my brothers from a young age. So yeah, I'm really fortunate to have that. So Mondays with Marilyn, 12 o'clock PM
on Clubhouse,
Pacific time on Clubhouse. And you need to have an iPhone in the app to listen. It's worth listening to. It's fun. Come on in and we'll chat.
Yeah. And not only not in jail, but very successful. So you went the other way.
Define success.
You love your job, you know, you're happy.
I do, man. I
think that is so rare. I am fortunate to be interacting with lots and lots of people and that have lots and lots of different kinds of jobs, and I have to say that a large portion of them don't really love what they do. And that's sad when there's so many opportunities.
It is sad. Yeah. It's I mean, real quick, again, one of my really good friends, he is a CPA, and every year during tax season, his body literally shuts down. He gets so stressed that parts of his body stop working. And he says every year, I hate my job. I need to find something different to do. And it scares me. Like, it makes me worry for him because he's such a good dude, super smart, clever, and just recently started painting. And he's a really good painter. Yeah, he's a good painter. It's one of those things where I feel like Salieri, you know, like in Mozart, Amadeus. If you haven't seen the movie, look it up. But Salieri is Mozart's nemesis in the movie, right? And he tries so hard to do all these things, and along comes this dude who just does it effortlessly. And it's like, why is he able to do that? And that's how I feel about him painting. Yeah. It's, like, I look at his paintings, and it's not necessarily the composition, it's not necessarily the realism of them or like the proper look and style and feel if he's painting something. It's the fact he understands tones, shading, tonality, shadows. It's like, what the fuck? It's so upsetting.
And
it's
that's
so
not,
upsetting for me.
That's not learned, right? That's like a natural.
It's either like when you first start doing it, I have to say, if you're able to do it, it's natural. You can learn. I mean, that's why they teach classes. I'm not going to say, oh, you can't learn that. But for him just to sit down and never painting before and then knock some shit out, it's like, what the fuck? Like, how?
Frustrating for us mortals. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he'd rather be painting and doing that because he loves doing that. And so you're right, it's very fortunate to bring it back to your original statement that we are doing something that we love. Yeah.
Well said, and what a great way to end the show. Thank you so much, Kirk. I truly appreciate you, and I'm excited to release this to the world.
So. Oh, Corey, dude, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you having me on, the second guest.
That's right. Number two, but number one today.
Yeah, man. Thanks. I appreciate it so much. And thank you for having me on. And always look for Corrugated.
That's right.
On Instagram.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the shout out.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
See ya.
This episode is sponsored by SpecRite, the first purpose-built platform for specification management. So much has changed when it comes to packaging, and there's a new book to help you stay ahead of the curve, The Evolution of Products and Packaging, written by longtime packaging executive Mr. Matthew Wright, helps you unpack industry trends and explains how you can use data to drive packaging innovation and sustainability. Download your free copy today at specright.com/book. That's SPECRIGHT.com/book.